Back together, you and I, on a midweek Wednesday, May 25th, 2022, on Connecticut Today. I wondered, what's next, as many Americans are calling for something to be done after the latest school shooting. University of New Haven criminal justice lecturer Robert McDonald, a veteran, by the way, the Secret Service, joined us to talk about what can be done to maybe try and prevent future mass shootings, if anything. And Yankee Institute for Public Policy analyst Ken Girardin details his recent analysis of the state's gasoline tax holiday. Same number that you called earlier today with Melissa. And with Lisa in the middays, and of course with Norm Pattis, who's new here every Monday through Friday, noon to two before this show, to talk about whatever's on your mind, and in particular today, the tragedy that unfolded in Uvalde, Texas. Look, we have to, if we're going to get into a discussion about this and what can be done, you know, everybody's like, well, we have to do something. And yeah, but here's the question. And when we get to situations like this, forgive me if I sound a little cold in these situations, because I will tell you again that this sort of tragedy did hit my family a few decades ago. But that's not the point here. The point here is I hear a lot of people say, well, we have to do something and do this and do that. Okay, so my question is, and we're going to open up the phones here. They are open, first part of the show here at 333-9422. It's very easy to say we have to do something. What are we going to do? Exactly what are you going to do that could get some sort of unanimity here? And the folks who are gun enthusiasts, I'm not sparing you either. Listen, nobody's going to get rid of the Second Amendment now. That's just not going to happen. That is, there are 300, an estimate, we talked about this the other day. There are 390 million guns in this country. So if you took away roughly half of that, let's say we took away, you know, roughly 190 million of the 300 million guns, there would still be, the vast majority of which likely legally owned by law-abiding citizens, you would have 200 million guns in this country. So the notion, and I'm reading this morning, and even some people that lean left and away from a lot of us on the political spectrum saying, well, you know what, it is time to start confiscating guns. Hey, stop that. That's never going to happen. The guns are not going away. So people on the right have to stop this irrational fear that anything that tightens up restrictions here or anything that puts certain reasonable limits on certain things, even for law-abiding gun owners, you got to relax with that, because you sound like the abortion nuts. You sound like the worst of the left that I always talk about, because these are parallel issues politically. They're not the same thing. But we laugh at the ones on the left, a lot of us who say, well, you know, they won't even put reasonable limits on abortion. Well, you know what? Flip it on the other side. You do need some reasonable limits on guns. Now, there are numerous laws out there. But here's the elephant in the room here on this. And again, if you want to chime in here, 333-9422, 333-WICC. Here's the elephant in the room. How do you prevent, and I'll take whatever suggestions you may have here, how do you prevent disturbed people from legally getting guns? How do you do that? Now, we're going to have an expert coming on in a little while on the show, in the latter parts of the show, regarding things like red flag laws. And I know red flag laws tend to, bing, 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 raise red flags. I get it. I understand that. But you have this situation yesterday in Texas. You have the situation a few weeks ago in Buffalo, where clearly, I mean clearly, and you had this at Columbine, and you had this at Parkland High School in Florida with Nicholas Cruz, you clearly, disturbed individuals, all right, people who have mental deficiencies here, for whatever reason, I have material on that we'll get into in a moment as well. Clearly, you have people owning guns that shouldn't. Here's the problem. You've got a lot of crazies out there who have never done anything to red flag a purchase. You know, I've had professionals in my family over the years that have dealt in the health business and the mental health area who have said that people who can be unbalanced, sometimes if they're doing things anonymously, like buying a gun or talking to someone that's not face-to-face, show no red flags. They show no red flags. Now, sometimes they do, and we're seeing this here in the further investigations of this gunman here. By the way, I would strongly suggest, because the coverage of the gunman yesterday, the coverage of this Salvatore Ramos by a lot of the mainstream media is not real good. I mean, we're getting dribs and drabs. I would suggest go to the Daily Mail, dailymail.com. They have dug up a lot, I mean a lot of information about this 18-year-old who, you know, tragically, and it turned out to have tragic consequences, was a very troubled youth. Okay, we get that. We understand that. And apparently he was, I think, on the day of his birthday or the day after his birthday, which, again, should kind of indicate something in and of itself. When your 18th birthday present is a gun, I don't know. To me, that may be a bit much, but, you know, we can deliberate that on another day. What's a proper present here? But the bottom line is, again, I ask the question seriously and rhetorically here, what do you do? Because we have the president, we have our entire congressional delegation, we have a lot of folks on my, you know, my social media feed saying, well, we have to do something, we have to do something. Well, what exactly do you do? It's really easy when these things happen to say, well, there it is. We got to do something. Okay, what do you do? Red flag laws? Well, there were no red flags with this kid. Now, sometimes there are. But again, maybe something short of a red flag law. And I don't know how you, you work that. You have freedom of speech issues. If they say stuff online, can you flag someone for speech? I mean, I don't know. I'm not an authority on that. I'm not the attorney here. Two of the four people on the air here Monday through Friday are attorneys. I'm not, and neither is Melissa. But we all know that that's a complicated area. So 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Now, here's the idea that I think you must, after this, after the whole Buffalo thing of a couple of weeks ago, here's an idea that I know a lot of people aren't going to like, and this has also been criticized by others across the racial and economic spectrum. We've seen it in this state, and, you know, some of our federal officials have been a little squishy on this too. Folks, I'm telling you, it is time, and I think I firmly believe it is time for the federal government, because this is the kind of thing that you can't let whiners on school boards decide. I'm sorry if you don't like that, but this is to me, it is time for the federal government, paid by federal tax money, and I know that makes people squeamish when I hear that, when they hear me say that, but listen, taxes got to be used for something. My idea, at least in the short term, is the federal government must mandate armed security in every school in America. Listen, I know there are people out there who are saying things like, oh, you're going to have the feds have a federal police force. No, maybe they can pay for it, right? How many billions are we sending to Ukraine? Which is fine. I'm good with that. How many billions and trillions did we dole out during the pandemic? I'm okay with that, even though there was a boatload of fraud. But the first thing we have to do, because you know some of these crazies are going to, unfortunately, it's horrible to say this, but you can't stop everyone. You just can't. You know, when military planners over the years and centuries have planned military campaigns and movements and troop movements, they don't plan for 100% success. I even heard some law enforcement people on some other media outlets over the past day or so saying, you've got to do what you can do to put out a wide enough net to snare as many of these people that you can, but you're not going to get everyone. Well, to me, issue number one, and I know a lot of schools do this, but I know there's been pressure from some communities saying, hey, they arrest too many kids of color. I know there's been pressure from the other end of the spectrum saying, well, you know, we live in a nice Tony suburb. I don't want my son or daughter seeing a police officer all the time. Nonsense. Both of those arguments are nonsense. You can work things out. But we need to start protecting our kids like we protect our money. Like, you know, when you're walking along your neighborhood sidewalk there in the center of town, or the center of your city, and you see an armored truck come up, and what happens? The two or three guys in that truck, they come out, they take a look around, and as they're wheeling coins and money into the bank or taking it out, they're looking around, and they have guns. It's time that we start being proactive. Well, it's a lot of money, Paul. Yeah, so what? And what isn't? We need to start being proactive and protecting our kids more, because you can eliminate all the guns you want. The mentally disturbed, the people out there that have some sort of weird sort of psychosis, they want to act out to a deadly point, they're not going away. They're just not. Now, are there things you can do on the gun end of it? Absolutely, you can. Our next guest is a lecturer of criminal justice at the University of New Haven, a former supervisory Secret Service agent who completed assignments with presidential, vice presidential, and dignitary protection services. So his forte is protection and shielding people from harm. And we welcome Robert McDonald to the program. Hey, Robert, it's Paul here at WICC. Good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, Paul. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us, Robert. Boy, you look at this situation in Texas, and put aside the mental health issues this gunman may have had, the familial issues and everything, and lend us some of your expertise on the attack itself, what your thoughts were, what he had. How could we maybe, Robert, better deal with situations like this, you know, before they happen, on a, as you specialized in for years, on a protection basis? You know, everybody is saying we have to do something. What is that something to try and thwart these attacks or harden targets in these cases?
Yeah, it's a great question. And obviously, the area that we're in has been very keen to this issue for, you know, going on 10 years now. And here we are still talking about it. You know, there's a lot of issues that you just brought up, whether it's mental health or the gun issue, and all these things feed into the situation that we came up with yesterday. You know, we need to develop more funding for different types of things. You know, protection and security, unfortunately, is not a money maker. It's a money coster, and it always develops into budgetary restraints and what does a particular school system want to send its funding to versus security and things of that nature. You know, we're never able to know exactly what's going on in somebody's head. We need to be cognizant of our surroundings all the time. We need to be able to stand up and tell authorities when we see that somebody is either saying some things that are wrong, isn't acting right. I think, unfortunately, we're getting a little bit numb to this right now, and we really have to kind of be prepared and be cognizant of what is going on in our surroundings.
So when you were, Robert, involved with the Secret Service, I would assume, and I've talked to folks in that line of work in the past, you know, you look at what are the vulnerabilities, right, in a situation. What do we have to take care of to make that target less, you know, less desirable for someone who would do harm?
Well, a lot of school systems, in specificity with this situation, have taken a number of steps over the past couple of years to harden their buildings, try to have one point of entry, utilize different electronic devices and locking systems that can shut down their school systems. You always hear, as we are hearing today, about the heroic actions of the teachers. You know, a lot of trainings have gone into place over the last couple of years on how to deal with different things. Law enforcement has a new take on how to neutralize threats by going to the threat, where in the past we would have hardened up outside and waited for the most amount of personnel to come. It's very unfortunate that, again, these type of things are still happening. And how do we find out about who those particular people are? I don't think we have that answer yet. it's a combination and or a conglomeration of many different things that we really have to put together. You know, when working with the Secret Service, we look to mitigate threats by movements of the president or vice president or a line of sight abilities of potential bad guys and things of that nature. You know, when you're looking at a day-to-day protection, you know, there are different methods and methodologies that can be put into place to deter someone. Had there been a police, and I don't advocate it necessarily, but had there been a armed police officer at that door yesterday where the attacker entered the robbed school, would he have even attempted to go in there by seeing somebody that may have been able to deter his intended actions? We'll never know, but there are a number of things that potentially could turn people away from being able to get inside that school and causing the carnage that he did cause yesterday.
Robert McDonald is the guest. He's a lecturer of criminal justice, a veteran of the Secret Service as well. Robert, hang on. We'll be right back with you talking about the tragedy in Uvalde, Texas. Traffic and weather together right here on WICC. Tapping into, as we are on all our shows here, experts in the area with their input on the tragedy in Texas. Yesterday, the mass shooting at that elementary school in Uvalde. Lecturer of Criminal Justice at UNH, Robert McDonald, continues to be the guest. He's a veteran of the U.S. Secret Service. Robert, over the years, and I know you've done preparation work for visits and summits like that, I would imagine there's a difference the way you approach security for certain venues that may have easy access different than other venues that may have difficult access. Might this be something that, and I don't know, maybe it is being considered in the design of sensitive buildings like schools, for example? I know points of egress and entrance are important, but is there an importance as to how many of those there are, where they are, how they're designed? Might that be a consideration into either modifying school buildings or maybe into the design of some of the newer schools around the country?
Sure, great question. You know, you've got to, in this scenario that we're talking about from yesterday, we obviously want to limit the ability of people to get into the school. But when you're talking about a lot of those sensitive type buildings such as schools or government buildings, unfortunately, we also have to remember that we have to have a number of ways to get out in case of fire or in case of someone getting in. So, yeah, I think there are a lot of design possibilities that are being looked at in new construction and things like that. I think if you look at some of the comments you heard yesterday or earlier today about the, for example, the size of the fencing around that school. My guess is that fence was put up to keep kids inside the school property as opposed to keeping people out. So, you know, I think there are a number of things we can do, whether it's at the building stage, whether it's at the renovation stage, or unfortunately after a situation like this, all things are on the table with respect to being looked at to minimize or deter these type of situations.
And Robert, you kind of alluded to this before we took a break. How do we sniff out possible perpetrators in the future? And I know when you guys and gals set something up when you were in your years with the Secret Service, from what I've been able to glean by reading and also interviewing folks that have done the great work you have, I mean, right, you have lists, you have files on people. Who is in this area that could end up being, you know, a problem from a protester to a deadly, you know, to a deadly kind of threat here? How do we do this now? Do we better watch social media postings for words and images? I mean, we have all this artificial intelligence, and I'm sure some of it's used now, but do we crank that up or not?
Well, you're absolutely right. It is used now, and it is used quite heavily. Different algorithms are put in to look for different words or phrases. You know, if you threaten the president on social media, I can guarantee you within about 20 minutes, someone from the Secret Service is going to be knocking at your door.
That quick, huh?
That quick. And that's why we have field offices all over the country. The Secret Service takes those things very seriously and, as you know, does respond to those in person to investigate those things. But if you look at this suspect's situation, pardon me, you know, he did post something, I believe, 30 minutes prior to injuring his grandmother. Mm-hmm. But from what I've heard so far, he didn't have a criminal record. He wasn't really on the radar too heavily. So, you know, social media is only as good as somebody posting something or someone seeing somebody do something that then gets posted. So, you know, those things are out there now. We didn't have those social media outlets, you know, all that long ago. So they are a big help. But unfortunately, they're not the be-all and end-all on trying to find these things out before they happen.
And finally, Robert, I would suspect you would think that despite all the whiz-bang stuff, the AI and everything, oftentimes, correct me if I'm wrong, it's that just that sixth sense of a human being sometimes, whether it's a family member or a friend who just may say, hey, something's not right here. I have to tell someone.
Sixth sense, luck of the draw, right place at the right time. Hearing the right thing coming out of somebody's mouth that just doesn't sound right, that certainly plays into it and is a big part of potentially putting some pieces of the puzzle together.
Secret Service veteran, now teaching a lecture of criminal justice at the University of New Haven, Robert McDonald. Robert, thank you. We appreciate it, and we'll chat down the road to be sure. Thank you.
Anytime, Paul.
Appreciate it. Robert McDonald there, UNH, a veteran of the U.S. Secret Service, was on some presidential details and vice presidential details, currently a lecturer of criminal justice at UNH. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. And that's one thing Robert mentioned. I'm glad he mentioned, in thinking of hardening schools on the just the remote chance that they could be targeted. But you, again, you can't make a blockhouse. You can't just have one way in and that same way in and the same way out. You know, you got to be careful. You can't have all bulletproof windows. What if a fire department has to get in there and, you know, ventilate the area quickly? You know, you can't have all these hardened double and triple locks. What if the, you know, what if somebody figures out how to kill the power? Get a return visit from one of our pals, Ken Girard, and he's a policy analyst for the Yankee Institute for Public Policy, yankeeinstitute.org. And something caught my eye that Ken had published the other day, a little study here, it's a little number crunching. Our gas tax savings starting to evaporate? And, of course, we talk about the 25-cent state tax. It's been eliminated first till the end of the fiscal year and then till the end of the calendar year as gas is now, it's not quite $12 a gallon, but it may get there. Ken, it's Paul here at WICC. Good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, Paul. Good to be back with you. What are you going to spend your gas tax savings on?
Well, here's the whole thing, Ken. You know, it's funny because when I do like whatever the, you know, daily averages, I say, you know, and hey, just think, if we didn't say that 25 cents a gallon, it would be X and X. But I guess you've run the numbers here. You're Connecticut, you're comparing Connecticut versus Massachusetts and kind of an interesting analysis here. Talk about that.
Well, going back to tell folks what happened back in March, there was this fury in Hartford for the state politicians to be seen doing something about the high gas prices. And politicians being politicians, they said, well, we're going to get rid of this 25 cent tax that the gas wholesalers pay before cars get the fuel. So we're going to get rid of that tax. The fundamental problem with that was people were paying this tax kind of blindly, as in they didn't know how much of the tax, how much of their gas price was going to the government, how much of it was going to oil refiners, how much of it was going to gas stations, how much of it was going to Middle Eastern despots. Mm-hmm. So the state got rid of this tax thinking, well, the price will just go down 25 cents. And they put it in the law back in March that the gas stations had to drop their prices by 25 cents immediately on April 1st. And most of them did. The interesting thing is there was nothing, there was no practical measure that could force these gas stations to keep prices 25 cents below what they would be. Because I don't know about you, Paul, but I can't tell you what the price should be, you know, 7 days ahead, 14 days ahead.
Sure.
And the state had no way of figuring that either. So what I started doing was watching what's the trend between the Massachusetts price and the Connecticut price. And looking back, the Connecticut price had kind of hovered between 10 and 17 cents, but pretty consistently, you know, close to 13 cents, more often than not, above the Massachusetts price.
Okay.
And as we got towards the end of March, it dropped a lot, and I'm not sure why. And the gap dropped a lot. The Massachusetts and Connecticut prices got pretty close together. Connecticut was 5 cents above Massachusetts. Well, we suspend the gas price. The gas stations do the mandatory 25 cent drop and the gas tax, and our price was about, the average price in Connecticut was 20 cents lower than Massachusetts. That all makes sense. The thing is, when you have prices go down, people change behaviors, which means, in theory, demand goes way, way up.
Mm-hmm.
So suddenly people who are commuting between Springfield and Hartford, or people who are driving from New York to Massachusetts, have a new reason to go buy gas in Connecticut.
Oh.
So that's driven gas prices back up. So where our average price was 20 cents below for the first week after this gas tax is suspended, it's now only 5 cents below, 5, 6, 7 cents, depending on the day, for the past few weeks, which means that if you do a kind of a crude approximation of stuff, it means half the savings aren't being delivered. Now, the state definitely isn't getting the money, and it was going to cost the state something like $30 million a month in foregone revenue.
Mm-hmm.
That's revenue that could have been used to fix roads. That's revenue that I would have recommended using to pay down the roughly $6 billion in transportation debt that we have outstanding. The same thing that Governor Lamont was pointing to 3 years ago when he said we needed tolls on the highway. I would have used this money that we're not collecting right now to pay down debt. And instead, we have the state saying we're giving you $30 million in savings a month, Connecticut drivers. And in reality, we're getting much less because the prices are trending back together. And it's possible, if not likely, that within a month, you're going to see the same average price in Massachusetts as you do in Connecticut, which would mean even more of the savings have gone away.
Interesting.
And this all comes back to this problem where these guys and gals just wanted to be seen doing something.
Well,
and they
yeah.
didn't think it through.
And I want to get to that momentarily. Let's take a break here. Policy analyst Ken Girardin is with us from the Yankee Institute, and he's calling this, as some people did at the outset, a gimmick. I know at least two or three columnists that did that. I was kind of like, and Ken will have him stake that out even more. First, though, traffic and weather together right here on WICC. Our gas tax savings, and the savings is in quotes, starting to evaporate. Ken Girardin joins us. We have Ken on often among the folks from the Yankee Institute for Public Policy with an analysis that he came out with a few days ago. And I remember Connecticut suspended that wholesale gasoline tax 25 cents originally till the end of the fiscal year, and now it'll go till the end of the budget year. So, Ken, I just want to make sure we're clear on this. So you, as some other folks did early on, said, okay, this is nice, it looks good, but this is actually, when you look at it short or long term, you consider this an election year gimmick?
I'll have the record show I never said this was a good idea. At no point did that possibility cross my mind.
As far as saying it was a gimmick?
As far as saying it was a good idea for an appropriate thing to
yes,
do.
Yes, yes, because you refer to it as a gimmicky tax cut. So, and I like that word. I have always liked the word gimmicky. Yes.
And the funny thing is, this is the closest that this is one of the few areas where the General Assembly actually cut taxes this year. we have all these folks trumpeting that there's been this tax cut, these tax cuts. One of these tax cuts is a scheme to send checks to families with children later on this year. That is not a tax cut.
Mm-hmm.
That is a spending program. That is not a reduction in the business tax rate. It's not a reduction in the sales tax rate. It's not a reduction in the personal income tax rate. This, and I just mentioned this because it speaks to the level of dishonesty that has surrounded taxes during this legislative session. It's positively exhausting, and it's going to get worse the closer we get to November.
Oh, absolutely. And again, Ken, the one I love is, property tax relief. Well, Ken, there's a significant number of people in Connecticut that don't own property. And even if they live in somebody else's, say, rental property, that doesn't mean they're suddenly going to see a reduction in their rent. You and I both know that's not going to happen. But again, as you say, that's being trumpeted here.
Let's put that in context, just for your listeners to know. That's part of the $400 or $600
yeah.
million that the governor is talking about in terms of tax relief,
mm-hmm.
Coming down from this legislative session. It's that some folks are going to be eligible for $300 a year tax credits.
Okay.
towards their property tax. That covers less than 3 years of increase that people have experienced for the median, for someone paying the median property tax bill in Connecticut. Those people have been experiencing growth in the neighborhood of $130 per year. So an extra $300 tax credit doesn't even set you back 3 years of how much property taxes have been going up, to say nothing about how much more they're going to go up in the future.
Ken Girard, and Ken, thank you. Do continue what you're doing. Great policy stuff. Ken Girard is policy analyst at the Yankee Institute for Public Policy. Check out all the stuff, folks, everywhere, including a link to their brand new news site. Go to yankeeinstitute.org, yankeeinstitute.org. Ken, take care. Have a good holiday weekend, and we'll talk to you down the road. Thank you, sir.
You too, Paul.
Appreciate it. There you go. Check it out, folks. Our gas tax savings starting to evaporate. And he does a very interesting and involved analysis here of certain points as to when taxes were eliminated on gasoline versus the price versus driving habits as well. Elasticity, as we call it in Economics 101.